Welcome back, new talkers. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 619, The Strange Case of Susan Rice and Other Mysteries. There's something new and fun to do these days, whether it is a date night, business client appreciation event, a corporate team building event, something with your family, or a friend's night out. It's at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Now, I can tell you that an artist will guide you through making and creating a painting. And I can tell you that you'll come away with a real painting, something you can hang on your walls at home or at work, something you and your friends and your co-workers or your family would be really proud of. But the other night, I actually went over to Brush Studio, and it's actually better if I take you inside a Brush Studio event a little bit, and you can kind of hear the reaction and what people do. So let's go on into Brush Studio.
Do you mind if I ask you some questions?
Sure.
You guys having fun?
Yes.
Yeah.
What are you painting?
We're painting birch trees. In the nighttime with a little cardinal.
We're trying.
So they give you paint, right?
Yeah, and you just follow the people at the front.
The person at the front.
And then you just follow their breaks and everything, and...
It's really fun.
Different thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, on a Friday night.
And a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're having a good time. We got the whole family here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So
I got my wife and our two sons and their fiance and one's girlfriend.
I didn't even know I could.
This is one, probably the most fun you can have at a job. Seriously. My favorite part is when people just completely go off the rails and do something that I would never think of or other people wouldn't think of, but they came here with like an intention. It's a thing to do on a Friday night that isn't watching TV, isn't going to a movie. You're being social with a group. You get a little wine or something, but it's not like that's all you're at, like at a bar, that's all you're there to do, you know. I've been teaching for 22 years.
Oh, okay.
And I make all kinds of stuff on my own.
You look like an artist. You have
what?
Fun?
Oh,
you
absolutely.
You look like an artist.
I just found my inner artist.
Your inner artist.
Yeah.
Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park. 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, catering from Crave in the West End. You're going to have a good time because they are event planning ninjas at Brush. Date night, client appreciation, corporate team building, family, friends. They'll all be great. Sign up online at Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park at brushstudio.net. Brushstudio.net, or you can reach out to Brush at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Oh, by the way, there's plenty of parking in the West End St. Louis Park. Don't forget, classes tend to fill up, so sign up for Brush Studio online at brushstudio.net or reach out to Brush at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio. Now, it is getting to be spring, and I'm hearing bikes, and I am seeing bikes, and that's good because with the spring weather, we should be seeing motorcycles. And if you ride, you know how important that is. So I want to turn you guys on to Ciro 3D for lighting options, great motorcycle products and accessories, especially lighting options and solutions. I've talked about some of them. Happy spring and safe riding from Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com, for more information about Ciro3D. I love this company, Ciro3D.com. This is complicated stuff, what I'm going to talk about. We're going to talk about the strange case of Susan Rice and other mysteries. And it's complicated. It's usually easier if somebody is an advocate or if it's advocacy journalism because they're trying to prove a point. But when you look at what is known, as I will for the most part, on this Susan Rice mystery or the mystery of whether or not Trump was involved with the Russians or whether or not the Russians were involved in the U.S. election in 2016, hacking the DNC servers, disseminating fake news, using sock puppets to stir people up on social media, some of those things, perhaps all of those things alleged to have been done by Russia, this whole thing that has now happened and is now on the top of everyone's agenda when it comes to the news. This week, the wrinkle is the Susan Rice thing, the idea that Susan Rice is the one that leaked the information and requested information that showed that proves, which it doesn't, by the way, that Donald Trump was in fact wiretapped by President Obama. So there's a lot of things that you can look at, and there, if I was an advocacy guy, there are things that I could say, this proves this and this proves that. And those are easier to follow than podcasts that say, well, there's a lot of questions here. And that's what we're going to do because it's a mystery. There's actually two mysteries wrapped up in a bigger mystery. So the first mystery is whether the Russians did what they did. First of all, the first mystery is whether the Russians did anything. The second part of the first mystery, see what I mean, is whether the Russians did what they did at the behest or with the cooperation of the Trump campaign. And as I will tell you, even that is suspect. Especially the DNC hack alleged to be perpetrated by Ukrainian hackers. Second, the other big mystery, probably the bigger mystery, in spite of the fact that if the Trump people got the Russians to intervene, that's the big story. But the second bigger story, I think, is this question of whether officials of the Obama administration spied on Trump and later the Trump campaign and then transition team on orders, and this is key, on orders from President Obama. Now, each of these strange mysteries has a lot of nooks and crannies. As I said, each of these mysteries has its fans in alternate and political universes, which is one of the reasons it's so difficult to talk about this, let alone criticize the conclusions of partisan camps on their pet theories. This whole thing has many, many, many classic elements of conspiracy theories, power exercised darkly by someone, legal or illegal, moral questions, foreign and U.S. intelligence collections, more importantly, U.S. national security, and then commentariat proponents for each. What am I talking about? I'm going to tackle that first. As a prelude to the strange mystery of President Obama's national security advisor, Susan Rice. So regardless of what happens in this country, usually the news stories, and I'm putting quotes around news stories, related to whatever event occurs are in fact commentary. And that is increasingly what passes for news, because you get headlines like Russians hacked DNC servers. Then you read the story and you find out that the writer is a former intelligence officer or former politician or U.S. attorney or head of some political agency or think tank or a former official in a presidential administration with an axe to grind. And my best advice for that is next time you see a story that looks like a news story, read it, but read it with the idea of saying, well, is this a news story or is this guy trying to convince me of a point of view? And then look up the writer's name. And you'll find most of the time these are opinionators. These are people who have opinions and who are paid to have opinions, who write about them. Columnists who are actually paid to do columns, opinion columns, to help people curate what goes down in the news day to day. And then you move on down to the people who consume opinionator and columnist content and use it. So cable TV hosts, YouTube commentators, radio talk show hosts, derivatives of derivatives. And they either, say this is what so-and-so said, or they read the story live on the show, or they show you a link to the story and say, hey folks, if you're watching, this is what's going on. But they don't know what's going on. They're just repeating what someone else said. Then the last piece of this chain is that you have a lot of cable TV hosts and radio talk show hosts that put out either transcripts of their shows or they write columns for partisan information websites, whether it's Huffington or Vox or Breitbart or LifeZet and Red State, that supposedly are objective. In other words, the site is supposed to be objective. The guy is writing a news story, but really it's an opinion piece. So it becomes very difficult to look for the facts. Now, I'm not going to go through a long and involved critique of the media in this podcast. I've done it 100 times, but usually what people are hearing from people on television and on the radio are opinions that jump off from news stories or are actually opinion disguised as news stories. Now, commentators may have something to say, but they're not journalists trying to discover and lay out facts surrounding a story so you have an idea of what happened. Websites that syndicate these stories, these quote-unquote news stories, generally don't tell you the story you're reading or hearing about is something called an opinion piece. Starts out with a paragraph that's a who, what, why, when, and where. Then it gets into trying to persuade you to believe something. And the facts may be facts or they may be twisted in some way, shape, or form to prove a point. Things may be left out because they don't prove that person's point. Now, this is not a rant about media bias, but if we're investigating a mystery, we need to know the facts and we need to understand that many of the facts, as they are established, are usually being projected out to say, this is what's really going on that you don't know. This is what's going to happen. This is the future that's going to come because I am going to write a piece that proves all these things. I used to do that. I don't do that anymore. I find it exhausting and everyone's doing it. So why do it? So then you layer into that political correctness on the left and patriotic correctness on the right. For example, you are not allowed to suggest that maybe, just maybe, the Russians didn't hack the DNC servers if you're talking to people on the left. You're not allowed to suggest that there might have been a political orientation to a certain, shall we call them, telephone intercept or intercepts reviewed by White House officials toward the end of the Obama administration and toward the end of the election right up through the inauguration of the new president. So you get reactions from people from camps, and it's very difficult to talk about this stuff because they only want to hear their point of view is right. People on the left think Donald Trump got the Russians to intervene in the U.S. election to cause an expected victory for Hillary Clinton to devolve into an electoral loss and a win for Donald Trump. People on the right think President Obama and his staff committed felonies and should go to jail, and the Susan Rice mystery with all its actors is proof positive this occurred and evidence of a felony by the Obama administration in ordering observation or surveillance of President Trump or President-elect Trump. None of that has been proven, and it's probably doubtful that that happened. And I know people get upset hearing that, but that's what you're dealing with. If you disagree with either of these propositions, and if you want to get to some kind of truth, any facts you assemble won't support either storyline. That's what I've learned researching this thing. And then what happens is you're pilloried. That is, you are attacked or ridiculed publicly because you're not on board. So if you want to listen to this podcast, you're going to have to ask yourself, am I interested in facts as we know them or the lack of facts as we know them right now, or do I want partisan support for my point of view? So if you believe one or the other, you're going to be disappointed in this podcast. We are living in an increasingly partisan environment. Suddenly this week, all the right-wing columnists have taken to their pens, microphones, and so forth to tell all the right-wingers that they must support and defend this president because, well, just because his policies are unpredictable and everything, but you know, he's more conservative than Hillary Clinton would have been, or he's truly a conservative. We may not be able to get everything we want, but we should be supporting this guy. And remember, with Trump, as I've outlined, we're talking largely about executive orders. Some of them I agree with, some of them I don't. Few acts by Congress. There's been little legislative liaison to get Congress to act in some of these areas, as witnessed by the failure of the Republicans to repeal Obamacare. Plus, you have people coming and going from the national security infrastructure at the White House. Steve Bannon is out now, supposedly, still at the White House, but out of the National Security Council. You've got issues with tweets from the president, reports of chaos and confusion as this administration tries to find a footing. Every administration struggles for a period of time at the beginning. Perhaps this one has struggled more, but it's hard to tell at this point. In all of this, you have a president who is perfectly capable of defending himself. So he doesn't need any defense from me. On the Democrat side, you have the new chair of the DNC denouncing the new president as illegitimate, which is a little bit extraordinary. People saying, he's not my president. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote and so forth. And if you go against that tribe's orthodoxy, you will be pilloried. I wonder, in all of this partisanship, what I can add to all of this, but maybe it's this. We don't know yet what happened or why with the Russians in the election or what happened after the whole thing broke with the Obama White House. We don't know what Trump did or did not do or whether he did nothing. We don't know what the Obama administration did or did not do. And we also don't know really what the Russians did or did not do. These are all allegations. Well, another thing that happens when it gets warm is people start going to look for new cars. And you, if you're looking at SUVs, you know, you can spend a lot of money on an SUV. Let me tell you about an option that, you know, I've been mentioning and I think it's really awesome. XGovernmentCars.com, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs, has a line on Department of Homeland Security and Border Patrol and other federal low mileage SUVs. So we're talking about Expeditions and Yukons. So they're considerably cheap when you compare them to the price of new vehicles. And if you can get one of these things with low mileage, it is huge. I've had three Crown Vics. Of course, the last one had really low mileage, and it's like a brand new car. So the other thing that's cool about xgovernmentcars.com is if you need a new car and you need a loan and you have a job, you can get approved. And of course, X-Government Cars takes trades every day. They pay the highest values all the time and no bull. Don't forget also the three-day Love It Guarantee exclusively at X-Government Cars. Get your spring butt down to xgovernmentcars.com. Now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, 763-777-8782.
xgovernmentcars.com.
All right, back to this whole craziness. Big, delicious sip of coffee. So we're going to start with the DNC hack. Or I should say the alleged DNC hack. The U.S. intelligence community, this is what officials call the IC, issued a report that pretty much implicates the Russian government as being behind a spear phishing attack of the Democratic National Committee servers. This is when somebody's email is targeted, the person clicks on something in an email, and that lets the wolves in. The result of this hack, which, by the way, came through John Podesta's email, who incidentally had a password of password, which is incredibly ridiculous. But anyway, this hack resulted in a trove of material from the DNC servers being released through WikiLeaks. This was then spun into a series of YouTube videos, news stories, and partisan coverage of stories like Pizzagate, which alleged Democratic political supporters and friends of the Hillary Clinton campaign chair, whose email was the target of the hack, were in fact part of a pedophile ring in Washington, D.C., being run out of a popular pizza place that a lot of political people used various times for different events. Or alleging that John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign chair, engaged in some kind of satanic ritual dinner with witches and so on. This was lurid stuff to go into WikiLeaks and be dissected by the conspiracy community and the people on YouTube and so forth and so on. And it provided a steady stream of fake news in two different trove releases at two different times during the campaign, which some believe Russians propagated on YouTube and other sources. Stories that may have caused Clinton to lose the election, except remember that she won the popular vote. So I don't really understand that particular idea. But anyway, that's the story of the people that carry on the storyline, and they're sticking to it. Except for some new developments Two reports I've seen recently are actually really interesting. One of them suggests the U.S. intelligence community has the capability to mask their own cyber warfare capabilities and actually disguise them so they will appear to be coming from national entities none other than the Russians or the Chinese or the Ukrainians. Many people do not know the FBI never examined the DNC servers in its investigation. In fact, a company called CrowdStrike, essentially cyber threat assessment and forensics, among other things, examined the DNC servers. And then they made conclusions about this being foreign hackers from the Ukraine or Russian government-backed hackers that did this. And they connected it to a hack of Ukrainian artillery controlling equipment that disabled some of the guns during this situation between Russia and the Ukraine. Now, the Daily Mail has a story this week which says, first, that the CrowdStrike group has quietly retracted elements of their earlier reports that Russia was behind the hacking of the DNC servers. And then CrowdStrike also came under fire for suggesting the same Russian agents hacked into Ukrainian military artillery control systems and said they said 80% of the guns had been disabled. Later, it turns out that it was more like 15 to 20%. And so CrowdStrike has adjusted quietly their conclusions on that. And they've also quietly retracted portions of their analysis that it was the Ukrainians backed by the Russian governments that hacked into the DNC servers. So we're back to this question. No facts yet, but it brings into question the whole Russian hack story. And I don't know. I'm not trying to prove that the Russians didn't do it. I don't know. And you don't either. And apparently nobody else does. Were there Russian attempts to influence the U.S. election through disseminating fake news, propaganda through Russia Today? Yes, undoubtedly. But the question is whether that's illegal. And the answer is no. It's free speech, really. Is it a national security issue? Yes, it is. Because foreign governments influencing U.S. elections should be an important national security issue. Now, before I get to the Donald Trump side of this and the strange case of Susan Rice and the mystery that comes from this, let me say none of this has anything to do with Hillary Clinton's private email servers. You see a lot of people on the right conflating Hillary Clinton's private email servers and whether or not she should have had them and saying that she's a felon and everything else related to these two issues and conflating the two. These servers were the DNC servers, not Hillary Clinton's personal servers. I believe it is true that if a government official that wasn't the Secretary of State or Hillary Clinton did what she did, they'd be in jail right now. But the FBI has said that while there is a question about ethics, there's nothing prosecutable there, or they don't intend to prosecute it. So that's kind of a case closed situation. The DN servers, again, were not Hillary Clinton's private servers, and this case has nothing to do with her ethics or potential felonies alleged regarding those servers. Now, as to the question of Donald Trump and his people having anything to do with the Russians, we do not know. There's a lot of smoke. We do know Michael Flynn had conversations with Russian officials he did not disclose during his confirmation hearings. We have also learned he was a paid, we'll call it a diplomat, but a paid agent for the government of Turkey, which was also not disclosed. We discover that the head of Blackwater Security was actually negotiating with the Russians. That's just recently been disclosed. We know that other people in the Trump transition team and associates of Trump, specifically Paul Manafort, who managed Trump's nomination effort at the RNC, worked with the Ukrainian president prior to the Orange Revolution and has had business over there. We also now know that various Trump transition officials talked to Russian government officials because of the fact that they were picked up in NSA intercepts, which brings us to the strange mystery of Susan Rice. First of all, who is Susan Rice? Let's take a quick sip. Susan Rice is actually pretty amazing. She was a Rhodes Scholar. She attended Stanford, Oxford, and she studied and is an authority on international relations, particularly places like Yemen and the Middle East and Africa. She was at the NSC under President Clinton, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations under Obama, and finally, National Security Advisors. These days, the partisan media has her as some kind of political flack within the Obama administration because she's the one that carried the Benghazi story during during that whole craziness. I think people have her confused with Valerie Jarrett, one of former President Obama's closest confidants. She remains one of his closest confidants and advisors. Susan Rice is known for her views on forward intervention, the idea of intervening in conflicts to avoid greater conflicts. I would say she is a practitioner and proponent of the so-called liberal school of foreign policy, or whatever derivative of foreign policy school we are practicing these days on the left. And some Republicans, by the way, which places high importance on the actions of individuals and groups within a state rather than the realist school, which most of the, you know, original Soviet hawk Republicans came from, which places high importance on state actions rather than the actions of individuals or groups within a country. Both schools of thought are much more complex than that. People who hail from both schools, they're not universities, they're just ideas about foreign policy, work together at the State Department and on national security. But for this mystery, these definitions will do. Susan Rice is a practitioner of the liberal school of foreign policy. And she is now being described as a political operator. Is she a political operator? Well, national security advisors and other White House officials and cabinet officers are political appointees. In that sense, they are political. But she is not a Mark Hanna or Steve Bannon or Karl Rove or Lee Atwater, political managers who later became chiefs of staffs for a president. So what is the strange mystery of Susan Rice and other mysteries? And we're gonna speed up a little bit because we're getting towards the end of the podcast, and I don't want to miss this stuff, but I also don't want to go on for 45 minutes. Susan Rice, in her role as National Security Advisor, was privy to legal intercepts of overseas calls of foreign officials. These are not wiretaps. There is a difference between wiretaps. Wiretaps are, of U.S. citizens have to be backed up with a warrant from a judge, because there has to be a probable cause to wiretap someone because of your Fourth Amendment rights, the right to not having to face illegal search and seizure. So there has to be probable cause, and judges usually decide. Wiretaps that are conducted in secret are approved by a FISA court, which decides whether there's probable cause for a wiretap of, let's say, a potential terrorist. The NSA and other signals intelligence groups within the CIA and across the intelligence community monitor foreign communications of all kinds. These kinds of intelligence products, which, by the way, are not illegal. It is not illegal to monitor telephone conversations overseas or of non-U.S. citizens overseas. And they have been around for a while. So here's the legal framework for use of these intercepts. In 2011, President Obama allowed for greater sharing of intelligence products in an executive order. And then in the second week of January of 2017, he further relaxed the sharing of this information in the interests of national security, which is within the Article II powers of a president of the United States. And without going on and on too long, this is how the New York Times described this final executive order in the final days of the Obama administration, expanding the power of the National Security Agency to share globally intercepted personal communications with the government's 16 other intelligence agencies before applying privacy protections. That's really important. The new rules significantly relaxed longstanding limits on what the NSA may do with the information gathered by its most powerful surveillance operations, which are largely unregulated by American wiretapping laws. These include collecting satellite transmissions, phone calls and emails that cross network switches abroad, and messages between people abroad that cross domestic network switches. This means far more officials will be searching through raw data. Essentially, the government is reducing the risk the NSA will fail to recognize that a piece of information would be valuable to another agency, but increasing the risk that officials will see private information about innocent people. Attorney General Loretta Lynch signed the new rules permitting the NSA to disseminate raw signals intelligence information in accord with the executive order after the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, at the time, signed them in December or on December September 15th. These intercepts are not finished intelligence products. Intercepts do not include the names of U.S. citizens that might have been captured during an intercepted communication. The names of U.S. citizens can be revealed through a process called unmasking by the request of an official with authority and security clearances. Now, remember that piece that I just read you from the New York Times, because that describes the legal framework for the number of people that could have seen unmasked documents. My understanding is this is not necessarily common, but is done every now and then if an official feels the name of the U.S. citizen in question is germane to the issue revealed in the intercept, because it's a national security issue. It is not illegal. It is not illegal to then disseminate and circulate these reports to various other officials with authority and security clearances. The strange case of Susan Rice and other mysteries is this. Commentators have alleged it was she who leaked the names of U.S. citizens, namely Michael Flynn, to the media. And to add to the mystery, and as an aside, remember that the only reason we know about this is because the Congressional Intelligence Committee chair, California Congressman Devin Nunes, was invited to the executive office building on the grounds of the White House in the middle of the night to view some intercepts. The only reason the intercept documents were ever uncovered was because President Trump tweeted that he had been, quote, wiretapped by President Obama, unquote. No evidence suggests there were any wiretaps of Trump. There was nothing signed by Loretta Lynch. These would require FISA court warrants. No such warrants or requests for warrants regarding Trump Tower have been found. They have only found these intercepts. And I understand there's just two of them in which Trump transition team officials or people who would later become Trump White House officials like Michael Flynn appeared because they were having conversations with these foreign officials. And I assume that they were Russian, but it's hard to tell. There is no evidence yet suggesting who leaked these names to the media. Virtually none. We do know that there were two White House officials who did leak the information to the media, and they worked for Trump. And that was the people that showed it to Nunes, who, instead of notifying his counterpart, the Democrat, on the committee, he just went over there and looked at them in the middle of the night or in the evening. And now we have this huge, you know, this huge controversy right now. Rice and other Obama administration members have denied leaking anything. Leaking would be illegal under the Espionage Act, which prohibits the disclosure of information concerning the communication of intelligence activities of the United States or any foreign government. But in a court case, national security would figure largely on all that. So before you jump off into the deep water of these people committed felonies, when you add to it the dimension of national security, well, that's another story. I'm not saying that anyone's innocent. I'm not saying they didn't do it. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that there are arguments that would support leaking to a certain degree some of this information, and they've already been made, and that it's in service to the country. So I'm not saying they're right. I'm saying that's going to be the defense. So in a nutshell, that is the strange case of Susan Rice and other mysteries. The right is going crazy. CNN refuses to cover a legitimate story. For the right, this is proof, positive, the Obama administration was illegally surveilling Trump's transition, looking for a way to delegitimize his presidency or prevent him from being inaugurated. And this is going to make the people on the right mad, but there is no proof. That is a leap of faith right there, this whole thing that Obama was doing this to delegitimize Trump. First of all, I want to point out to people that the Obamas really dislike the Clintons. That's the first thing people need to understand. Barack Obama, I don't think, really wanted Hillary Clinton to be president. So I'm not saying he worked against her, but assuming that he was on her side is, I don't know, come see, come saw. We don't know that. And there certainly is no evidence to suggest there was any intent to do any of that. And it makes people mad because they want to hear that, yes, they were trying to delegitimize Trump. The intercepts are not illegal. Unmasking requests by people in authority, which would have included the National Security Advisor, are legal, especially if you come into account and you think about this as a potential national security threat, you know, meddling in a U.S. election. Leaks are illegal. Legal, but they're hard to detect and they're very hard to prosecute, and politically small potatoes. So there's no proof so far of any of this. No proof the Russians hacked the DNC files. No proof Obama ordered Trump to be surveilled. No proof of a political operation to stop Trump once he won the election by Obama. Certainly, you know, the Hillary Clinton campaign didn't want him to be inaugurated, but that didn't mean that she was going to become the president either, because he won the Electoral College. It would have meant, if they didn't inaugurate Trump, I would assume they would have had to nominate, they would have had to inaugurate Pence. And of course, the vice president is inaugurated first. It doesn't mean proof doesn't exist. It may. Proof may exist, but we don't have any right now, and we don't have any proof that any citizen in this country is aware of. But I have some final thoughts. So President Trump hasn't rescinded any of the executive orders issued by President Obama allowing the sharing of intelligence reports across agencies. He certainly has not rescinded the president's executive order of January 2017 allowing further sharing and dissemination. He certainly hasn't moved for a repeal of the Patriot Act or its successors. So despite all the shouting and screaming and all of the people who are upset about surveillance on the politically correct left and on the patriotically correct right, suddenly right-wing people are concerned about surveillance. They never were before, or they're not concerned about surveillance as long as it's on people that they don't like. Trump is not about to rescind that power, which means he is certainly aware of any conversations former Democratic officials might be having with foreign officials overseas. So if you're a member of the patriotically correct right and you only see things the way Alex Jones sees them or Breitbart or the White House, and you feel that Donald Trump must be defended at any cost because apparently he can't defend himself, you're not going to like this. But let me get you to suspend disbelief and debate for 1 second and ask you, and this pertains to my statement that the problem with partisanship is sometimes the other side is right. And if you're smart, you will admit it and you'll see their arguments for what they are, even if they don't, okay? Here's the question. Do you think it is a national security issue if a foreign power engages in efforts to disrupt a U.S. election, either through political contributions, misinformation, or other means? I do. I think it's fair that that is a national security issue. So let me just take you back to the summer and fall of 2016. The Hillary Clinton campaign was told by a company they hired that the Russians had hacked their servers. This is a campaign that was struggling even then, even though it looked like they were going to win, or at least people thought they were going to win. The intelligence community in the existing government at the time agreed with that assessment and issued a report saying so. Whether true or not, officials in the Clinton campaign and its supporters believed the Russians were attempting to intervene in a U.S. election. They did not know then whether they could, whether it was possible to hack into voting machines or anything like that. But both campaigns talked about so-called fake news as a factor up to and including Russia Today or RT's coverage of the election and the possibility of social media manipulation. And let's not forget, Michael Flynn got paid to appear on RT, which also was not disclosed. Now, it's not always a fair argument, but if the shoe was on the other foot, that is, if we were on the heels of a successful Republican administration for 8 years in 2016 and the potential succession of a former Republican Secretary of State, what do you think the reaction on the right would have been if somebody said the Chinese had hacked the U.S. election? Right-wingers would talk about national security. They would defend the FBI investigation. They would defend the intelligence community. They would demand something be done, as would a Republican president. And that is exactly what the Democrats did. They pulled every string they could to get people in the White House to take a look at this because they knew a Republican-controlled House wouldn't. So the Obama administration looked into it. Is it possible the Russians were manipulating things in favor of the Republican candidate? Could they? Did they have the capability to do that? And once Trump won a stinging defeat for Democrats, looking into that question, given the powers of U.S. intelligence capabilities, human and electronic, the Obama administration would have looked at phone intercepts or anything that might involve U.S. officials to answer the question, was this some kind of bizarre attempt that succeeded to influence the U.S. election? What they found remains a mystery. because they found Paul Manafort and Roger Stone and Michael Flynn and perhaps others, but we don't know because we haven't seen all of the information. It's illegal to leak this stuff. Maybe it was illegal for Deep Throat, right, to leak information to the Washington Post, but that didn't disprove that the president had ordered a break-in of the DNC. The truth is, this is a mystery. We just don't know. We don't even know what the mystery is, because if the Russians didn't hack the DNC servers, well, who did? Was it U.S. intelligence? Were they looking for something along the lines of Pizzagate? Was it the DNC itself trying to call an airstrike in on itself and then blame it on the Russians in some crazy last-minute political gambit to take the pressure off a faltering and failing presidential candidate, you know, falling into vans and everything else? What if there is more to the Russian story than we know? Why is Trump so concerned about this? You know, does he protest too much? Why tweet that he was wiretapped when it wasn't true? You know, why he had a great State of the Union speech, everybody was happy with him, and then out comes this tweet. If he didn't make any deals with the Russians, then why protest this story so much? Why not just say, yeah, well, you know, we didn't do anything with the Russians, so I don't know what to tell you. Go ahead and investigate it. Maybe he's doing it to stop the leaks, and I suppose that makes some sense, but this is a ridiculous effort on his part to stop leaks, if that's what this is all about, this last bit of exposure of the intercepts and so forth. The bottom line is there's a lot that we don't know, and we're not going to be able to assess the facts or access the facts as they are revealed if we have preconceived notions, and it's going to be a while, because citizens are not going to be privy to every little bit of information regarding this. And I am not going to go into a knee-jerk defense of a new president or a knee-jerk attack of an old president just because I didn't agree with the previous presidential team. I don't have any idea who hacked the DNC servers. I don't have any idea of whether Trump officials were or are involved with the Russians or what the reason is. There's definitely some smoke, but there's no proof about the DNC servers. There's been no proof about the Russian stuff. And the difference between me and 98% of the other commentators out there is I refuse to tell you what to believe, and I refuse to fight for the current president or attack the last president to try to burnish my credentials as a quote-unquote conservative. You're going to have to figure that one out yourself, and good luck. Meanwhile, this obscures some really important developments, from the Syrian question or North Korea to the Obamacare repeal to tax reform to immigration to economic policy to working with Congress and other legislative efforts, which are extremely important right now. And that is the effect. That's the one thing we do know about the strange case of Susan Rice and other mysteries. Well, that should do it. And don't forget, if you're looking for a line on low-mileage expeditions and Yukons, don't forget xgovernmentcars.com. They also have the Crown Vicks while they last, Ford Police sedans and SUVs, Dodge Chargers, which are really popular, Impala V8s, and more. xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And if you're looking for a business or corporate event, a date night or family or friends night out, Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. You heard the whole thing at the beginning of the podcast about Brush and how much fun it is. Reach out to Brush if you're interested. If you're going to sign up, do it online because they tend to fill up fast. 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. BrushStudio.net. Also, in the news these days, you're going to be hearing a lot. In fact, there's already stories about job creation and everything else with manufacturing in the United States. If you work for a company that manufactures overseas, you are preparing to bring some of your manufacturing back to the United States. If you're considering American manufacturing, don't forget Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 618 on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, in. Blog Talk Radio thanks Amy for the boost from Facebook. Really appreciate it, Amy Domestico at blogtalkradio.com. And I also appreciate the liking and the sharing and the favoring and the sharing and the favoriting. The sharing. I know it's sharing, but I say sharing. That way I don't have to say favoriting. Just sharing. And following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And I really appreciate the donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Getting ready to go out in the spring for spring operations. I'll tell you more about that later. All right.